Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday, May 27th. 52 degrees here under mostly sunny skies. Heber City reporting 57 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back as we go throughout your Wednesday. The big story, well, it's going to be the wind out there. We're going to be looking at some gusty winds as we go throughout the day. We'll call it mostly sunny to partly sunny skies. Watch out for a little blowing dust from time to time as we go throughout the day with those gusty winds. Southerly winds anywhere from 20 to 35 miles per hour with some potential gust up to 50 miles per hour at times. Highs will be in the mid-70s for us in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing to around 80 degrees in the Heber Valley. As we move into your Thursday, more of the same gusty winds, warm temperatures, little blowing dust. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid-70s again in Park City, with high temperatures climbing into the low 80s in the Heber Valley. As we get into your Friday, we'll start to track some changes. An upper-level low that's going to be cut off to our west will finally start to move a little closer to northern Utah. That will bring in a few more clouds, so we'll call it partly cloudy skies for your Friday. Breezy conditions, we'll see those highs around 70 in Park City with highs in the mid-70s in the Heber Valley. There will be a chance of a few isolated showers and rumbles developing for your Friday afternoon. I think a little better chance of that Friday night into your Saturday morning as that low pressure moves by across northern Utah. We'll see that chance of scattered showers and thunder showers out there for the area. High temperatures will be much cooler for your Saturday, with only low 60s expected in Park City, with highs only in the upper 60s in the Heber Valley. So a true cool down heading our way. Now, as we head into your Sunday, we'll call it partly cloudy skies. Should be drying out by that time, with temperatures in the upper 60s for highs in Park City, with highs in the mid-70s in the Heber Valley. Moving into next week, get ready for a big ridge of high pressure off to our east. It's actually going to retrograde back to the west and build in. That's going to mean lots of sunshine to kick off the first week of June, but also temperatures that will be warming up mid to upper 70s in Park City, highs in the low to mid 80s in the Heber Valley. That's what you love forecast for the Wasatch Back on ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Kane.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with the vice president of Summit Pride Foundation, Chris Campbell. We hope that President Virginia Solomon can join us as well. Park City Chamber Bureau Senior Director of Partner Services, Scott House, with a monthly lodging update and a recap of the Wasatch Back Economic Summit. And later on, Park City resident Jen Drummond will be joined by two boys, her two sons, climbing Mount Blanc as their mom attempts to become the first woman to climb all seven summits and all second seven summits. Then stay tuned for the Mountain Life. Today's guests include therapist James Ott and Nicole Small of Red Willow Counseling and Recovery, talking about how to best support teens as they navigate the challenges of adolescence and how to know when to consider a therapeutic approach. Then Ivy Watrous and Kobe Summer of the Salted Roots will talk spices, salts, and embracing all the flavors of life as we head into the summer months. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, heard, of course, every Wednesday from 9 to 10. The Park City Farmers Market will celebrate its 25th anniversary when it opens for the season today. Local vendors will be selling fresh produce, baked goods, and more. The market is held in Park City Mountain's first-time parking lot. It'll be open every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., rain or shine. Camas baker Volker Ritzinger started the market to share his artisan breads. The market was moved to the base of Canyons Resort in 2001 before returning to its original location at Park City Mountain in 2024 when construction began on the parking garage in the Cabriolet parking lot. Park City has a new set of rules for commercial recycling and trash hauling. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the guidelines are meant to divert more waste from the Summit County landfill.
The Park City Council approved code changes May 21st to increase recycling levels. The new rules require waste haulers to register with Park City, identify the items they haul, label bins, and report on weights annually. Sustainability manager Luke Carton said haulers would start recording how much trash, food waste, recycling, cardboard, or other materials are being picked up starting in July.
If you are picking up recycling or food waste, we just want to make sure that you're taking it to a facility that recycles or takes that food waste. Because I guarantee you everyone hears that the trash truck picked up my trash bin, then picked up my recycling bin. They all go to the same spot.
If waste haulers don't comply, they may receive a written warning and a fine of up to $500. Businesses must comply to receive or renew a business license and have several options for doing so. Those include providing proof of active waste and recycling services with an authorized hauler or participation in a shared waste program, like the Historic Park City Alliance. Carton said this creates a paper trail if there are issues with businesses not following protocol.
If someone says, hey, so-and-so business is dumping in our bins, we can go talk to that business and say, hey, let's go through your waste bin. Let's see who you have accounts with.
Businesses can also self-haul their trash and recycling, but must register with the city. For example, a home-based business that exclusively uses residential curbside waste services. Businesses can also be fined for violations and must follow rules related to the timely cleanup of spills and overflowing containers. The city is providing information sessions on the new requirements. There are digital and in-person sessions June 9th, 12th, 17th, and 19th. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Pride Month is coming up in Park City, and Summit County will be celebrating. In the studio with me, I have Vice President of the Summit Pride Foundation, Chris Campbell. Unfortunately, President Virginia Solomon couldn't meet with us. So, good morning, Chris.
Hi, Leslie. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so maybe just start a bit by telling us about the Summit Pride Foundation, what the mission is, and what the organization does.
Great. Yeah, we're an organization. We've been here for a few years. We were the task force, LGBTQ task force beforehand. Our goal is to work alongside our allies to sustain and expand LGBTQ plus inclusivity in the Wasatch Back so that all people can feel a genuine sense of belonging. And we do that through social events, local advocacy, and charitable programs.
Okay. Now, the Park City Council passed a resolution earlier this month affirming the city's commitment to advancing inclusion for LGBTQ plus residents and visitors. Why is that an important action for the council to take from your perspective?
It really helps us to feel the support of our community and to know that we have that and that it's a meaningful support, not just a token support. That the official actions really help us feel like the community is behind us and is willing to support us when times get tough, and times have been tough over the past few years. We feel sometimes attacked, and so we appreciate knowing that our community says that's not okay here, that this community is for everybody.
Hmm. So let's talk a little bit about what this year's celebration might look like. I mean, what are the major and activities that the community can expect through basically the month of June, right?
Yeah, so we have a number of exciting events, starting with this Sunday, which is technically in May. It's the last day of May, but it will kick off the start of the June festivities. At 5 o'clock, we'll meet at the main lot of PCMR. There will be a march from there. We'll even have a marching band leading us to City Park. At 5:30, festivities will start in City Park. We've got local music. We've got food and desserts from local vendors. There will be a drag show. Our community partners will have information there. That includes Intermountain Health, the Utah League of Women Voters, Utah Pride Center, ACLU of Utah, and more.
All right. So the march and the gathering afterwards, all family-friendly activities?
Yep, family-friendly. This is a time to just come hang out with your neighbors, your allies, your friends, have a good time on a beautiful day, and enjoy community.
Yeah. Any events specifically designed for youth?
Not specifically at that mm-hmm. event. And this year, we don't have any specific youth events. We do, as part of our charitable programs, we do provide scholarships for youth. So we're very excited. This year, we gave scholarships to a student from South Summit, a student from Wasatch, and a student from Park City High School. And these are community builder scholarships for students who are leaders of their GSA and who are working to build community in their schools and in their surrounding community.
All right. So due to legislation by the state last year, there won't be any pride flag raising, as we have seen in years past. When Governor Cox was first elected, he was a big supporter of the LGBT community. Has he sort of rescinded that support? I mean, is that how you feel about it?
You know, it's been interesting to see how different leaders find ways and different organizations find ways to provide support for the community. One of the things that we really like to focus on is how we in the Wasatch Back can really support each other. And so with our Pride activities this month, and I can go into some more of those, we're really focused on how can we build that sense of community here, and starting with our local leaders. So our city council, our mayor, our county council have all been super supportive, and we find that that organic support coming from the community up is what is important to focus on for us.
Okay. And I guess, what does Pride Month mean specifically in a community like Park City or here along the Wasatch Back?
Well, there's a great chance to explore that. So starting with that Park City Pride, which is our general community, come to that event. Then you can come on Friday the 26th in partnership with Create PC and the Arts Council of PC and Summit County. We have a chance to showcase local LGBTQ artists. So you can come and get an experience, an understanding of how LGBTQ artists express their art and themselves through their art at that event.
When and where is that going to be?
So that'll be at the Art Collective. There'll be a pop-up exhibit, and they're still accepting artists, I believe. So if you're a local LGBTQ artist, apply by June 5th or so if you want your art displayed in that event. We have on, it's the 23rd, Tuesday the 23rd, there'll be a Pride Bunch with SOAP, that's Seniors Out and Proud, at the Park City Library. And so that's a chance to come and learn the history of LGBTQ seniors and their organization and how, you know, as representation visibility of the community has changed over the time, you can come hear the stories of some of those seniors and what their experience has been like. So that's a great way to learn from that. We're also going to have, in partnership with Park City Film, we're showing the 2026 Sundance film, Give Me the Ball, about Billie Jean King. And so this will be a chance to really understand the experience of LGBTQ athletes over the years. So we'll have the film showing Billie Jean King's story, and then we'll have a panel afterwards of local LGBTQ athletes sharing their experience as both a member of the LGBTQ community and an athlete, and how that mixes and what they've faced.
Yeah, what date is that?
That's on Sunday the 28th, and that'll be in the evening, 6 p.m. showing. Earlier in the day on that day, we have the Deer Valley Pride, which is a super fun activity on the mountain. We have downhill mountain biking. There's music. There's giveaways. Our partners will be there, food. It's a great time to come and hang out. So for your more active youth, that can be a good chance to participate there as well. Or for your more active adults, hop on your bike. If you don't ride, that's okay too. Just come hang out on the mountain, enjoy beautiful weather, end of June. And we're really appreciative of our hosts. Deer Valley and Park City Mountain Resort are both excellent hosts for us throughout the year. We really appreciate their partnership and their willingness to help give visibility to the community in really fun ways, getting on the mountain.
All right, so all of the event dates, times are online at?
Yep, at our website, summitpride.org. You can find out all about that. Some of those events have registrations. So the Pride Brunch, for instance, with SOAP, has registration through the Park City Library, and you can get a link there from our website.
Awesome. Okay. Some have questioned why the queer community gets a month to celebrate, and we only have other days for other important events like Memorial Day or 4th of July.
Well, we really enjoy having a great time as a community and getting out and having activities. So we encourage people, if you want to celebrate yourselves and your identities, please get out there and do so. Or there's nothing that says somebody can't have a month. We welcome everybody to celebrate whatever, and we just really enjoy being able to get out and get visible. It's important for us as a community to have joy, to have pride in ourselves as people, as identity, and to claim that space, but that doesn't mean that others can't also claim that the space and celebrate themselves. We encourage that sense. We want everybody to feel a sense of belonging and a sense of joy for who they are.
Yeah. Are there efforts underway to reach people in maybe some of the more rural parts of Summit and Wasatch Counties?
Yeah, so that's part of our outreach when we do the scholarship at South Summit. We want to connect with and support and be a community partner for the GSAs at various schools. I don't think North Summit has a GSA currently. But yes, we're very much interested. Summit Pride, our goal is to reach throughout the Wasatch Back. So we welcome the opportunities to partner with organizations and groups and people throughout the county and throughout the Wasatch Back.
Mm. And then what are you hearing from the LGBTQ youth in our community right now?
You know, I think there's a mixture of concern and also hope and joy. When you go and see just the positive ways. It was really, really cool to read through the applications for the scholarships from all the different schools and to see how these leaders in their community are really really working to create positive moments of joy and celebration to work with their allies and to work within their communities to make change, not just for the LGBT community, but also for their communities at large. I think they sense, you know, some of the friction that has been around, but they're looking for positive ways to make a difference in their communities.
Yeah, so I'm guessing, I mean, the events like this that you have planned, I mean, do that helps foster the belonging? I mean, because we hear so much about just the fragile mental health of our LGBTQ youth community.
Exactly. Well, we know that belonging and a sense of community is a protective factor for things like suicide, mental health, all that kind of stuff. So the more that people can feel that sense of belonging, the more protected they are. So we really look for these opportunities to build a community, to experience community, to just have fun hanging out together, with our allies, hanging out, being able to be comfortable, visible in our community and not feel threatened is a really powerful protective factor. And that's another reason why having the support of Park City and Summit County is really helpful. When we see the banners, when we see things on transit, that helps us to feel like it's a safe place to be visible and to be ourselves.
Okay. Are you still looking for volunteers? I know that you had put out a request for volunteers at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. We welcome volunteers for any of these events. In particular, we would love to have volunteers for the Park City Pride set up. You can go to our website and you'll see a volunteer page that has some sign-up details on the specific things. We also are an organization that welcomes people to jump in and help with our organization at any point. And then the final event, which is also not in Pride Month itself, but we do have an entry in the 4th of July parade each year. So we welcome people to come join us, march in the parade, celebrate our country. One of the really cool things about the Park City film that we're doing is that's one film in a series that Park City Film is doing that's part of America the Beautiful series, which is a full celebration of all the diversity of American experiences. And so with it being the 250th anniversary of the birth of our country, transitioning from that into the 4th of July and celebrating the fact that we are all Americans and being an American, you can be an American in a diverse and a variety of different ways. And so we really enjoy being able to be visible as LGBTQ Americans in that parade.
Okay. Chris, anything else that you want listeners to know about?
I just want to thank all our partners, all of our, you know, donors, everybody that's supporting your efforts help increase that sense of belonging. They help support our youth through those scholarships. We just welcome you to come out if you've got questions, if you want to learn more about the community, or if you want to pitch in, come to one event, come to all the events, check it out, learn, ask questions, participate, and have fun this June. It should be a great time.
Okay. Again, that first event happening is Sunday, May 31st. Meet at Park City Mountain Resort main lot there at 5 p.m. and bring a picnic.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Chris Campbell, again, is the Vice President of Summit Pride Foundation. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Park City's official frost-free date is still several weeks away. Renters at the 130-plot Summit Community Gardens can begin planting cold weather crops. Father's Day typically marks the final day of freezing overnight temperatures in this Park City, conditions that can destroy a garden in a single night. Summit Community Gardens Director Jess Collette says gardeners should still be cautious despite the recent warm weather.
Right now is a great time to plant all of your root vegetables and greens and these cold tolerant herbs like cilantro and dill and parsley. But I'm still holding off on those frost sensitive plants. So tomatoes, peppers, squash, all those summer veggies, just a little bit longer, probably more around mid-June. The nights are still going to get colder, even though they're kind of nice right now. I just know that we're going to have more frosty nights.
Collette says frost cloth can help protect fragile plants, but only raises temperatures by about 4 to 5 degrees above the outside air temperature. This season's garden plots are fully booked, but Collette says residents can still join a wait list.
Occasionally people move or need to return their plots throughout the season, so we do have a wait list if folks are interested.
The dates and participating restaurants and businesses for this season's Dinners in the Garden event have now been confirmed. Proceeds benefit the food pharmacy program. The garden also hosts education classes and workshops throughout the season. More information on the events page is online at kpcw.org. In the studio now with an update on the summer lodging numbers and a recap of this year's Wasatch Back Economic Summit, I have Park City Chamber Bureau Senior Director of Partner Services, Scott House. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the lodging data. You have the numbers as of April 30th. As expected, the numbers way down due to the warm temperatures and, of course, lack of snow and the resorts closing down.
Yeah, so we saw in April occupancy was down 20% or 24% year over year. And like you said, really tough. We knew the snow wasn't there. Resorts closed early. And so that was a challenge. I think as we look at kind of the last 6 months in the rear view, certainly April was a tough month, but overall down 13%, which when you consider the winter isn't too bad. And room rates held remarkably well. So that average daily rate just down 1.7% at 880 through the past 6 months, which really speaks to kind of the resiliency in that lodging market. And then as we look forward, you know, the next 6 months only shows occupancy modestly down about 3.4%, and rate is up 1.4% at 398. And that 3.4% is shrinking. So we're seeing that kind of backfill already, and we're looking forward to a positive summer.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. Winter's always been the area's busiest season, but it sounds like summer could be catching up.
Yeah, I think, you know, what we look at certainly is trying to smooth out those peaks and valleys over the year and not have as many eggs as maybe we used to in the winter basket. And one of the biggest things that we're seeing is our group sales and group meetings are really helping to kind of stabilize the market right now. Lots of interest in that group travel. Our group sales team is doing lots of work and filling kind of those shoulder season rooms. So from May all the way through October, November, they're willing to help to kind of plug that gap right now. And it's looking positive. So hopefully we see that 3.4% erased and we go positive.
All right, so what do these lodging numbers mean for the tax collections, which certainly help fund the Chamber Bureau?
Yeah, so local sales tax is a bright spot. It's up 10% for the month and up 5% year to date. So when we're talking year to date, that's January to April. And then we're obviously talking February performance, so up that 10%. It's a strong signal for us. Restaurant and lodging taxes are kind of linked and they reflect that softer winter. So restaurant tax was down about 6% for the month, but down just 0.7% year to date. So nearly flat. And TRT was down about 7% for the month, but again, only down 3% year to date. And that really tracks closely with that lodging occupancy. So not too surprising overall to see that. Recreation, arts, and parks is essentially flat, but trending positive, down just 4%, but up 2% for the year. So again, rough winter, but the horizon is looking positive, and I think we're feeling good about heading into spring and summer and where we're at.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, though, to see those next 2 months, March and April. Again, February looking okay, but
yep.
That's really going to take a hit, I think.
Yeah, and we kind of know that as an organization at the Park City Chamber. We know that March and April are going to be a struggle for us. We know that those are going to be tough tax receipt returns and tough on our budget, and we're already planning for that. But really what we're focused on is, you know, that's kind of in the rear view. We've done our planning. We've done everything we can to address that. And now it really is looking forward and looking to summer and really just ramping up and getting ready for the great weather we're about to have.
Okay. So another Wasatch Back Economic Summit has come and gone. How did we do 2026?
You tell me. How did we do?
Well, you know, I felt like it was so strong, and then just so many people left after lunch.
Yeah, I think that's a common theme that we're always trying to work through with the Wasatch Back Economic Summit is how do we keep people engaged past that lunchtime keynote session. But to your question, I thought it was an excellent year. We had great sponsorship engagement, really happy. Great to see Zions Bank come back as our presenting sponsor. Of course, all the sponsors for that event that really made it possible. Deer Valley stepped up in a huge way to help us coordinate parking logistics this year, which was great. And then in terms of the content, I think this year's content really was a shift back to that traditional WBES focus, right? Really local, keeping it positive, keeping it forward-looking, and really trying to think about what we can do in the future to keep our economy strong.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. The summit was structured differently this year. I mean, did you heard from some of the participants. I mean, did they prefer were the sessions that were broken into basically three categories? I think it was business, economics, and workforce.
Yeah, so far, well, feedback has been overwhelmingly positive. Mm-hmm. We have a 85% excellent or good rating, with most of that falling into the excellent rating. We did find that attendees really liked having the breakout tracks defined so that you could kind of pick a track and follow that. We need to do some work around how we kind of message the breakout rooms during the event, but other than that, we felt pretty good. And then in terms of the topics, you know, workforce, that economic development or resiliency side and kind of that tourism product side, these were conversations that maybe we've had in the past but haven't updated in the last couple years, so it felt like the right time. And especially given the winter that we came out of, it made a lot of sense to start looking forward and talk about, hey, we could dwell on a winter that maybe never was, or we could use this as a great inflection point as a community to say, hey, what did we learn? What do we see going forward? And how do we better prepare for a situation like this if it comes to us again, which we know it will with, you know, a changing world. And so, yeah, overall, we think the summit was very positive, great feedback so far. And I think we're always looking to tweak, right? Is it, does next year end at the lunchtime? Do we do, like a singular session in the big room next year. So all of that's always on the table in terms of planning.
All right, so it was the director of the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute at the University of Utah, Natalie Gochnar, who was the keynote speaker at breakfast. She discussed the new Utah. I guess what were your takeaways from that? She's really an engaging speaker.
Yeah, she is excellent. And I think what I like most about Natalie is her focus on the data in a neutral way. It's not positive or negative. It's just the data, and we have to look at it and take it for what it is. But I do think, you know, the morning keynote and what Natalie spoke to in terms of the new Utah, at least for me personally, I think a lot of us that have been involved in the community and the business community, is we've been seeing and feeling this for some time now. And so it's great to kind of get that reassurance that, like, these shifts are happening and these are the ways that they're happening. I think the greatest thing of that is, Utah is Utah, and we shirk trends and we do things our own way. And I think from an economic perspective, it was great to hear that, well, yes, we do see some indicators of maybe some tougher times coming. Utah is poised more so than any other state to weather any storm in front of us.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly, she talked about migration, and this was surprising. I mean, birth rates have really come down, so the migration we're seeing in the state is from out of state.
Yeah, so that net population growth, which used to be driven by our birth rate, right? Young families having kids and increasing that population, that's now flipped. And so now it's in migration is driving that population increase, while birth rate or the growth in population due to birth rate has dropped. And so again, that's, if you think of Utah traditionally in the last, you know, 100 or 50 years, that birth rate's driven things. So that's definitely a big shift. And I think you see that, you know, maybe not as big as families, people moving here that not having those large families, you know, maybe one or two kids versus four or five kids. And I think that also helps what you see in Utah in terms of our diversity. We see it here in Park City. We see it in Salt Lake. We see it in the Heber Valley. Just a lot more diverse demographic. So we're seeing, you know, more ethnically diverse, more religiously diverse. And I think that speaks well to our state. And it really makes us resilient and strong as a community, just having that diverse voice in our state here.
And I guess something surprising to many of us was the fact how fast Morgan County is growing in terms of new jobs.
Yeah, wild, right? And I think these are some of the cool things that when you start to look at things versus number growth and percentage growth and how those two things play together, but the growth along the Wasatch Back and really Morgan on the job side and Wasatch County on the population side, really driving a lot of that growth. And I think we can look at it in two different ways. You can say, well, there's a lot of pressure and we have to address it. And of course, that's a thing. But I also think we can look at it and say, look at this great opportunity we have in front of us. As a growing community, as a young economy, we have a lot of opportunity in the future to keep the Wasatch Back the place we know and we love.
Yeah. And it wasn't discussed, or at least that I recall, in terms of that job, what are the new jobs in Morgan?
I don't have that data in front of me. Okay. We can go through Natalie's report and follow up with that if you'd like.
I'm wondering if it has to do with the new ski resort there.
Yeah, Wasatch Peaks, mm-hmm. I think, probably has some development there. You know, and you're seeing just more of that construction trade as Morgan grows out and there's more residential communities being built. And so, you know, as we start to kind of get built out, whether it's Summit County, the Wasatch Front, those developments mm-hmm. go into different areas where there's land, cheaper land available. And so I think we're seeing some of that as well.
Okay. And she also briefly mentioned the Olympics, of course, coming. And in terms of that, I mean, just optimism for the next 8 years?
Yeah, you know, that was an interesting one. I think our community always is, it wants to hear about the games because we know it's on the horizon. But we're actually still far out to really talk like the nuts and bolts details of infrastructure and planning and volunteers. We're just not at a place for that yet. So I think the conversation we really wanted to have was around that optimism. And I think Dallin Kosher from the Heber Valley Chamber really said it best when he said, you know, in 2002, he wasn't as engaged with the game. He was a teenager in the Heber Valley, didn't really engage with it, and the games happened to him. And I think Dallin said it best when he said, if I can say one thing, I encourage everybody to engage. Don't let the games happen to you. Be part of them. Take part in this. It is an experience of the lifetime. I mean, we're talking 1% of the global population since the dawn of history has gotten to participate in an Olympic Games, either as an athlete or as a spectator. So it's just an incredible opportunity for our community, our families, everybody here, our businesses. And so like Dallin said, I think this is our opportunity to engage and not let the games happen to us, but to be part of them.
All right. Let's talk about a couple of the breakout sessions that you scheduled. One of those was titled Generational Dynamics in the Workplace. This was presented by a human resources expert, Deborah Stone. Why was this a subject that warranted a session? And I don't know, were you part of this one?
I was part of the planning of it, but okay. I wasn't actually part of, I had to moderate another panel at the same time, unfortunately.
Okay, well, part of that was that she separated us out by, you know, boomers, yeah. Gen X, you know, millennials and Gen Z, and it was fascinating. I mean, what have you heard about that?
Yeah, so we were really interested in this. This was our good friend Becca Gerber, and I. Becca came up with this topic, and we were just brainstorming one day in the office, and we're like, you know, there's so much that has to do with communication and communication friction in the workplace, and oftentimes it's not that an employee isn't proficient or that they're not trying to be a good employee. They have different expectations of the workplace. They communicate in different ways. They view things from a different perspective. And so when we brought in Deborah, our goal was to say, let's highlight these differences. Let's try and get them all on the table in one room so that we can better understand how generationally we communicate different and how we value different things in our work environment and our workplace. And so actually, the feedback from that session was overwhelmingly positive. And so we're hoping to bring back Debbie to do a deep dive on that sometime in the coming future as like a lunch and learn, because so many people were like, there wasn't enough time. We didn't get to cover everything that we wanted to talk about. So definitely a conversation that we're going to revisit with Deborah Stone here in the next few months, hopefully.
Okay, yeah, and I'm going to take more of the Gen Z attitude. That's my goal. let's talk a little bit about another outbreak session, and that was the regional economic data. Jeff Jones, our economic development director for Summit County. We also heard from Wasatch County. Any takeaways here?
Yeah, you know, I think Jeff is an amazing statistician and data scientist. We're really fortunate to have Jeff. You know, I think it's really interesting just to see some of the contrasts between Summit and Wasatch in terms of like that population growth and pace. You know, but I think when we think about like Wasatch County, right, you're going to add 9,000 residents and just over 6,000 jobs in the coming decades. And when we look at Summit County, we're only going to add about 1,400 residents, but 13,000 jobs. And so we've got this significant labor gap that we're going to have to address. And we've known this across the Wasatch Back for some time, but it's interesting to see it come out in the data. And I think what it helps us understand is that, hey, there's work to be done here. It's an area where we need to remain focused. And we have to do a lot to make sure that we have the highly skilled and really well-trained workforce that makes our community run.
All right. Let's talk in our final few minutes about some of the upcoming chamber events. What's going on?
Yeah. So we've got Wasatch Back Business University coming up on June 3rd. That's next Wednesday at the Blair from 11:30 to 1. And we're going to be talking about SBA programs, funding, and free business support. We brainstorm topics for Wasatch Back Business University about every 3 to 4 months. We come up with a kind of track of courses. And so this was actually brainstormed towards the end of February, beginning of March, when we were all in the winter that never was. And we felt that there's a lot of SBA programs, Small Business Administration programs, funding programs that go underutilized by businesses. And as we're coming out of a tough winter, you know, we're looking at a bright summer, hopefully. We felt this is a really relevant topic to maybe help businesses understand the tools and resources that are there to either help them bridge the gap or to make a strategic investment at a time when maybe others aren't, to get themselves ahead in the race. So should be a great topic. And like I said, June 3rd at the Blair, 11:30 to 1. You can register on parkcitychamber.com for that event.
And you don't have to be a member to be part of the university program?
No, the Wasatch Back Business University is a collaboration between the Heber Valley Chamber and the Park City Chamber. It's sponsored by America First Credit Union. Of course, we would love if you were a member, but we don't turn anybody away at the door. Our belief is, hey, we want to build a bigger table with more chairs so more people can sit at it. The more people that have this education, the stronger our economy and our businesses can be.
Okay. It is over the lunch hour, so does the $10...
Lunch is covered. Yep. Great. Nice. Food at the Blair, of course. Great team there. Good EAV, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Oh,
okay. And then what else you got coming up?
Yeah. And then we have a Green Business Lunch and Learn coming up on Wednesday, June 10th. This is going to be at Hotel Thanes from 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. So a bit longer, a little bit of a deep dive on writing sustainability content that people care about. So when we think about sustainability, I think we've all heard the term like greenwashing, you know, sustainability. And it's like, what is sustainability? What is green? What are all these things? And so this is really working with businesses to get around skipping the jargon and the buzzwords and the keywords and really writing content both for your website, for your social media content, your blog, your newsletters that really represents the sustainability efforts of your business within the framing of your mission, vision, values. But speaks to a broad audience, right? We know that there's going to be some terms that maybe are triggering for individuals or can create conflict. And so what we want to try and do is avoid some of those catchy terms that maybe are a little bit, create some friction, but still help you relay your message and get it across to a broad demographic.
Okay. Scott, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, it's just been awesome being here with you, Leslie. It's great to see you and get out in the spring. And I hope everybody's going to have a great start to their summer this coming weekend and just enjoy. The trails are running good. The weather's good. And summer's looking positive from a visitation and economic standpoint. So hopefully we're kicking things off well as we head towards June.
Okay, Scott, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Scott House is Park City Chamber Bureau's Senior Director of Partner Services. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Park City resident Jen Drummond just finished climbing two more of the world's tallest mountains. This time, she brought along two of her sons, three of her children for one of the climbs. She joins me now in studio along with two of her sons. I've got Joe and Jacob Hokanson. Good morning, guys. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Jen, let's just start by having you bring us up to date on your goal. It started out as being the first woman to climb the world's second tallest peaks. You finished that in 2023 and then set your sights to climb the world's tallest peak. So where are you at?
Yeah. So what happened is I dropped my son Jack off at school and boohooed when he went to college and realized these years go by so fast. And when I had scheduled the second summit record, they said, you know, you only have 3 mountains left, and you'll be the first and only female to climb the highest and the second highest peaks. And when I looked at those last 3 mountains, 2 of the 3 my sons could join me on. I'm like, so now we get to train together and hang out together and have this experience together. So that was what allowed me to continue to pursue these. We just finished one together. I finished one by myself, and Jacob and I are headed to Denali in a few more days.
Okay, let's see, you just finished Mount Blanc, the highest peak in Europe.
Yep.
If you exclude Russia, right?
Yes, yes.
So then you went into Russia.
I did. I did not bring the kids to that one.
Okay, to climb Mount Alvarez, which is the highest point in Europe, if you include Russia. So, again, three of the boys came to France to climb Mount Blanc. I guess, Jake or Joe, you want to start by telling us a little bit, how did that go for you?
Mount Blanc went pretty well, honestly. It was a lot bigger than I thought it would be. And like when you go out there, everything, you don't understand how big the mountains are until you get like someone skiing below them that you see in a distance and they look like a speck. It's like insane how real it is. And I don't feel like you can understand it until you're there.
Yeah, and how about for you, Jacob?
Yeah, for me, when I first got there, I say that it was pretty terrifying. I kind of realized what I just got myself into and what my mom pulled me in to do. So, but yeah. I mean, my mom was super confident about it, so even though I was a little bit nervous, I kind of took a little bit of her confidence for myself and just took it one step at a time.
Now, was this the first mountain that you had climbed with your mom? I mean, like, big mountain?
No, we did Kilimanjaro, which was super fun. It's, like, super pretty. You go through, like, every biome, and, like, it's just so cool to see the culture there and, like, how everyone's so nice and, like, uplifting. They're all, like, singing the way up the mountain and, like, carrying, like you have like a person who carries some stuff up to help, and it's crazy how they do it. They're climbing these walls and flip-flops with more than double what you're carrying, and it's insane.
Yeah. Jen, though, you did have some concerns about it, and tell me a little bit about the workaround.
Yes. You know, like sometimes we take for granted what we're exposed to often, and so I was used to seeing seracs and crevasses and different things, and when the boys saw those for the first time, I could see they're like, Mom, are you sure? And so when we got there, there was a serac that everybody was pretty concerned about. And when we looked at it over like the few days, we're like, you know what, that has a chance of calving. And so I knew I had to go from the base to the top to the base for it to count for the record. But we decided it probably wasn't safe enough to bring the boys up that route because it'd keep them exposed for too long because of the amount of time it would take on both directions. And so the window for me to summit came up April 29, April 30, came down April 30. And then they're like, well, the window is again right now. If you want to take the boys, there's no heli skiing in France. We'll have to drive to Italy, bump a helicopter above that serac, climb from the Italian side, and then ski back down into the French side. I'm like, you really want me to go May 1st? I just got down like 5 minutes ago. And so we actually drove over to Italy on the 1st, and God was looking out for me, and he said, hey, no weather window. You guys got to come back on the 2nd. And so we did. We went back on the 2nd. We got the bump above the serac. We hiked up to the top on crampons for most of it. And then we skied down, and the boys saw the serac because we avoided danger by one human. And I'll let one of them tell that story.
Jacob?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that was definitely crazy. We decided to ski down the north face of Mont Blanc, which is definitely like a steeper part. And yeah, right in front of us, you kind of have to traverse over this like serac debris field, which like the ice chunks are the size of cars. And right in front of us, this lady lost her footing and just slipped, just did not stop and just kept sliding down. And yeah, we all decided to take off our skis and use our crampons to cross that section. And then yeah, just kept on going.
Was she okay?
We're not sure. Mm-hmm. When you watch one of those events, it makes everything very real. And we were a little more cautious the rest of the route down. The neat thing about climbing in France is that their helicopter rescue system is unbelievable. And so while we saw that all happen, she was rescued within 15 minutes.
Yeah. So how long does it take to climb Mount Blanc? I mean, did you have to sleep on the mountain?
I mean, you can. So if you come up from the base, you like stay in a little hut, and then you climb for, I think, about 8 hours up, and then you summit, and then it's about four hours down. But we took a helicopter, and then we hiked from the Italian side for 4 hours up. And basically, we didn't even do any skinning. Normally, it's like a majority of skinning up. And then it like felt like we were like in a video game, basically. It was like the realness of you climbing in the crampons and just like seeing the vast size of this mountain, like is, I don't know, it's just kind of, I don't even know how the words to describe it. But, and then once you get up there and then you realize that you're only halfway up, or halfway done, you have to prepare and ski all the way down for 4 hours again. So
Yeah. Well, mountaineering, I know it involves discomfort, risk, and certainly some uncertainty. I mean, what did you learn about yourself, Jacob?
I would say myself, I really learned that, like, your environment is really important, the people you're around. I think that if I went and did that mountain all by myself, who knows if I actually, like, when I got there, I'd be like, oh, I don't know if this is for me. But I was able to, like, you know, definitely, like, get some confidence from, like, my family members. Like, my mom, she was definitely, like, ready for this. So, yeah, I think that your environment for, like, who you're around, like, if you're around good people, then it's definitely going to, like, shine on you.
Mm-hmm. And, Joe, what did you learn about your mom after climbing Mont Blanc?
I learned she's crazy. That's some crazy stuff to do. I don't know. Yeah, I was, like, it really brought, like, a realness to what she does and the risk that can occur. And I would say that I learned that how much I appreciate doing things with them, because, like, I don't know, just doing, like, real hard things with your family or the people you care about is, like, what truly gets you guys to build a connection. So, like, we do more than just mountaineer together. On vacation, we go, like, spear fishing. Like, obviously, we still hike, but we just all do things that we all want to, like, push ourselves to do. And I feel like I learned from this mountain was just, like, trusting in yourself. Because if you can't trust in yourself, then, like, you're not going to be able to, like, exceed to your highest ability. And then, honestly, just, like, having the people around you help motivate you. Like, I wasn't going to give up because I was with my brothers there. I'm not going to be the one who brings them back. And then I knew if they saw me succeeding, they would push themselves to do that.
Yeah, and Jen, I guess, what did you learn about your three of your sons?
Yeah. You know, it's so fun watching them adapt to new cultures, watching them to adapt to different plans and strategies of what we came in there to do and what we ended up doing, and then seeing them be strong at different times. And every time whoever was strong was smart enough to know to lift the one who wasn't up. And so just watching them operate as a family and take on the challenge.
Well, you're now one mountain away from completing this goal. And as you mentioned, you're leaving June 6th with Jacob to climb Denali. What does this mean to you? I mean, at this point, to you personally, that you've come this far?
You know what? The human spirit and what we're capable of when we lean into discomfort and to each other, it's every time. I'm just in awe when we get to these places and see these sites and know what it took and show up for one another. It's the best part of life for me.
Yeah, so Joe, Jacob is going. How come you decided not to?
Ooh, I was
senior,
like,
senior grad parties is what he's saying.
I don't know if I'm really one to freeze my butt off for that long up there. I liked it because I could ski, but that's a gnarly mountain. I'll give them props for doing that one. So I'm going to stay back and stay warm.
Okay. And then, Jacob, you're the only one child that's coming along?
Yeah, I'm the only one. I'm going to be there for when my mom gets that world record, which I thought would be really cool. And it's kind of one of those experiences, especially after Mont Blanc, I definitely had, like, a different perspective on mountains. And I kind of understand why my mom likes them so much. It's kind of like... one of my favorite quotes is, like, if you feel like you're ever dreaming too big, go somewhere where you feel small. And I think that that's the perfect environment to do that.
Mm-hmm. So how are you preparing physically and mentally, I guess, for the expedition?
Honest, physically, you know, just definitely stretching recently, especially after Mont Blanc. My muscles have been a little bit tight. But, yeah, honestly, just, like, endurance workouts, hikes with, you know, rucking, weight on your body, stuff like that. And then, yeah, honestly, other than that, mentally, you kind of just have to throw yourself in there and figure it out.
All right. So how long does it take to get up Denali? Because this is something you've tried
before. I've tried, yes. So last year we did not have success. The guide got sick and our expedition got cut short. And so then this year I thought it'd be a fantastic idea to self-guide, which I'm, like, rethinking as I'm planning out all the meals and tracking all the weather reports. And I'm like, why did I add this to my plate? But I have a great team that I assembled of people, and we're all in it together. We're hoping the weather aligns. It could be as short as 14 days. If the weather throws something at us, it could be as long as 28. So there's a lot of variables that you're planning for, but we are going in with everything we've got.
Okay, so how do we follow along?
Yeah, so if you go to this website, jendrummond.com, there's a page called Climb Higher, and that will have the tracking device on us. We'll be giving you daily updates of what we're doing, experiencing, and thinking, and you are welcome to follow along. We'd really appreciate that.
And Joe, I mean, and Jacob, I guess, what's it been like to grow up with a mom who is about to accomplish something that nobody, no other woman has certainly done?
Life-changing. I really realized that the only limits you have are the ones that you put on yourself, because you can truly do anything. My mom used to not sleep in the backyard with us in a camp, like in a tent, and then she decided to go do Mount Everest, and then that's spiraled into all this. So it's kind of crazy to see what you put on yourself and how it can hold you back.
Yeah, and Jacob, any thoughts?
I don't know. I think that, yeah, growing up with my mom, I think that, like, one of the biggest things is, like, she really showed us that you can do any, like, you know, you can do anything you want, really, if you just dedicate your time to it. I mean, she's doing something that no one else in, like, the history of the world has ever done.
Yeah. Pretty impressive. Jen, we'll be following along, and I just want to note that your third son, Jonathan, unfortunately had to take a test. It's just that time of year. So he also completed Mont Blanc as
he
well.
He did. And all these kids were trained under Dar, and we, like, said stuff about Dar while we were climbing. Like, thank God we got ski skills from him, because that helped out a lot over here.
Yes, for sure. Love Dar.
He'll be happy to know that. And the three boys are of the seven children you have?
Yes.
Okay. So. All right. Jen, Joe, Jacob, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
Good
so
luck.
Much. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City.